जिज्ञासितं सुसंफनम् अपि ते महदद्भुतम् कृतवान् भारतं यस्त्वम् कृतवान् भारतं सर्वार्था परिब्रह्मितम् Studies were also well fulfilled. And there is no doubt that you have prepared a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences, elaborately explained. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The despondency of Vyasadeva was certainly not due to his lack of sufficient knowledge, because as a student he had fully inquired about the Vedic literatures, as a result of which the Mahabharata is compiled with full explanation of the Vedas. Jigyatam adhitam cha brahma yathat sanatanam tathapi sochasyatmanam akritartha iva prabho. You have fully delineated the subject of impersonal Brahman, as well as the knowledge derived therefrom. Why should you be despondent in spite of all this, thinking that you are undone, my dear Prabhu? Purport. The Vedanta Sutra, or Brahma Sutra, compiled by Sri Vyasadeva, is the full deliberation of the impersonal absolute feature, and it is accepted as the most exalted philosophical exposition in the world. It covers the subject of eternity, and the methods are scholarly, so there cannot be any doubt about the transcendental scholarship of Vyasadeva. So why should he lament? Inquiries were full and your studies were also well fulfilled. And there is no doubt that you have prepared a great, wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences, elaborately explained. You have fully delineated the subject of the impersonal Brahman, as well as the knowledge derived therefrom. Why should you be despondent in spite of all of this, thinking that you are undone, my dear Prabhu? Vyas, is here. Being addressed by his spiritual master. Srila Narada Muni. In the Bhagavad Gita, Jagadguru, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, in a similar way, spoke with his beloved disciple Arjuna. Inquiring to see what was the mind of his disciple, waiting for that moment when the higher truths could be revealed. So Narada is, in one sense, praising Vedavyas for all that he has done. But in the same time, on another platform, he is waiting and hoping for Vedavyas to come to his own conclusion of his deficiency. Vyasadeva, sitting in his Badrik ashram, was feeling greatly despondent. But by all material standards, he had done the greatest work that has ever been seen in the literary field. In this world, people become proud and enlivened when they accomplish something great in whatever field they may be in. If an athlete becomes a champion, he becomes very enlivened, very happy at his accomplishment. If a businessman successfully closes a big deal, or gets a big promotion, or gets great recognition, he feels a sense of self-satisfaction. If a scholar writes a wonderful work, which is applauded by other scholars, receives some degree, he feels inner satisfaction. If a surgeon performs a successful operation, or a doctor cures a patient, there's some self-satisfaction. If an actor gets a big applause, wins some award, some satisfaction. If a musician makes a record that becomes number one, he's satisfied. If a brahmachari successfully fulfills Nirjalikadasi, feel some satisfaction. In this way, everyone, according to their particular life, when they successfully accomplish something, there's satisfaction. And when there's failure, there's despondency. But herein we find Vedavyas, as a literary writer, he had accomplished what was impossible for anyone to accomplish. He had already written the four Vedas, the Atharva Veda, the Yajur Veda, the Sama Veda, the Rig Veda. To this day, 5,000 years later, people are doing yajnas, reciting these four Vedas. People are spending their whole lives just to study these four Vedas. Just like Sripad Shankaracharya, when he appeared in this world, he established four mats, principal learning centers, which are still existing today. Badrik Ashram, Dwaraka, Jagannath Puri, and Sringeri Math in Karnataka. And these four maths were entrusted to four of his most important original disciples who he had given sannyas to. And each of these four maths was meant to specialize in the study and the distribution of the knowledge of one of these four original Vedas, the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda. And to this day, over 1,000 years later, still, in these 4 months, there is the scrutinizing study and recitation of these four Vedas, written by Vedavyas. He also wrote the 108 Upanishads. These Upanishads are considered by so many millions and millions upon people to be the authority by which we can know the truth. They are being recited, chanted. They are such deeply, intensely scholarly works in such eloquent Sanskrit prose. And he also wrote the Puranas, the Linga Purana, the Shiva Purana, the Varaha Purana, Brahma Vivarta Purana, Vishnu Purana, Padma Purana, which explains incredibly deep study of history since the beginning of this creation, and also histories of other creations at other times and other universes. Nowhere is such depth and elaborate history have ever been revealed to the world as in these Puranas. And everything that is spoken in these history books of the Purana is absolutely perfectly correct historically. All the histories books we find by mundane scholars have defects. There is always a certain slant or opinion of history. But how do we know whether it is actually true? But Vedavyasa's Trikala Gyan, that means he knows past, present, and future. He's actually seeing the histories and writing what he is envisioning. Therefore, it is perfectly true. It is one of the offenses to the holy name to consider these literatures written by Vedavyas to be exaggerations or to simply be something symbolic. It is fact. No doubt, great symbolism and great learning is to be understood, but historically, it is all factual. And he also compiled the Mahabharata, as is being explained here. Even to this day, scholars and poets throughout the world, they cannot fathom how such a literature could have ever been written. It's over 100,000 slokas. And it's all in perfect rhyme and perfect meter, perfectly presenting historical incidents and presenting the highest philosophy, as well as speaking in such a way that every class of men, according to their interpretation, will greatly benefit. For the karmis, those who are fruitive workers, how much they study the Mahabharata and the Gita to get a proper higher understanding of the Karmakanda philosophy. And for the yogis, the Mahabharata is one of the most important classical literatures for all yogis, because it teaches and inspires them to develop greater and deeper potencies and the ways and the means how. And for the worshippers of demigods, karmis, and the jnanis who are seeking liberation, mukti, through their particular interpretation of Mahabharata and Gita, they can find the treasure of everything they're looking for in life. For those who are looking for economic development, sense gratification, religiosity, or liberation, the Mahabharata is a scripture which includes the instructions for all classes of men and enlivens them. What type of literature is this Mahabharata? Nothing like it can be written by a mortal man. Only God himself could create such a work. And then he took all these Vedic literatures and did what is so difficult. He condensed them all into small sutras. Super powerful, concentrated codes, which reveal all the truths of all the Vedas. And the greatest acharyas of all the sampradayas, they have all considered it a great necessity to study the Vedanta Sutra and to present commentaries on it. We find Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya. They have all given their commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. And that is their statement to the world. So, after accomplishing such super excellent, superhuman contribution to the world from the material level, from the spiritual level, Vedavyas is feeling despondent. He feels like he has failed. And this was his qualification to hear from his spiritual master, Narada, about the fulfillment of the ultimate goal of his life and his mission. If we are satisfied with where we are at, we cannot progress. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us, if a person is under such dense, thick illusion, intoxicated by the modes of material nature, that he really thinks that he's happy in this world, and he really is under the conception that he's satisfied, Prabhupada said, there is no use trying to preach to such a person. Because even if they listen, they will not hear. Because they don't really feel there's a need for anything beyond or anything else. The person who can hear Krishna Katha properly is a person who is frustrated with material life. And therefore, for a devotee, when he sees common materialistic people enjoying material life, he sees that they are in a hopeless state. And he's praying that their material life will be crushed, so that they are frustrated, so they are dissatisfied, because only then can they properly and attentively aspire to hear higher purpose of the truth. Of course, it is not always that we have to be crushed, but we have to be dissatisfied. We have to be willing to understand the futility of all of our materialistic endeavors before we can open our ears with eagerness to understand what is beyond. Because study of the Vedas is not just an academic form of research. We have seen great scholars in the East and in the West who perfectly have mastered the Sanskrit language from a material point of view, and they do research in the Vedas. But the quality of their lives and the condition of their heart does not change even after 50 or 60 years of all day long practically studying and researching the Vedic literatures in the original Sanskrit. And even we have seen such persons, they study the commentaries of the great acharyas as a matter of research, but they get no realization. Srila Prabhupada wrote so many wonderful books, and there have been tens and millions of these books distributed all over the world. And there's no doubt that millions of people read them to some extent or other. And no doubt there's a supernatural connection to Krishna that's being made. But why so few people actually have their hearts transformed? Because they're just not ready to hear. They're still under the false hope that through material prosperity and sense gratification, they will be happy. They haven't come to that level of enough frustration. Sometimes people are frustrated, but they still can't hear, because in their frustration, they're so anxiously and intensely striving with the hope that by some material arrangement, their frustrations will be resolved. So they're not really materially frustrated, because they still think that there's a way by material arrangement. Therefore, they cannot hear. Just like you can take the best type of fire, but if you throw it on grass that is soaked and saturated with water, that fire will have some effect, but practically none. But if you take that same piece of fire and place it on grass that is utterly dry, then immediately it will begin to create wonderful flames. And if you put the fire on grass that is slightly damp, it will just little by little start to catch. So in the same way, if we are saturated with hopes for material prosperity in our life, and we are satisfied with those ideas, our consciousness is like wet grass. The fire of transcendental knowledge might touch us, might come right into our minds, but it has very little effect. And some of us, we are thinking maybe there's something better, but still, material life is what I really have faith in. And a little more effect, but not much. But when a person is akinchana gocharam, when a person is actually materially exhausted, he's giving up hope, he really is looking for something beyond, then that person, when he hears transcendental knowledge, that knowledge immediately enlightens that life. And he's immediately ready to take to the process wholeheartedly. So devotees have a vision which materialists cannot understand, because devotees are actually praying and hoping for the materialist to become frustrated. That doesn't sound so much like compassion, but actually it is. It's the greatest compassion. Just like if a doctor has the patient, if a patient has a disease but he won't take the medicine because he doesn't believe he has a disease, then the doctor is praying, let the symptoms intensify so that he'll take the medicine, so that he'll believe me. Is this true? Otherwise he will die. So in the same way, devotees want to see the world become Krishna conscious, want to see the world joyful, blissful, chanting God's holy names, living according to their real constitutional position. And they know that the word of God can save them ultimately from the repetition of birth and death. Sometimes devotees, they take to Krishna consciousness, they develop some material skills and abilities, and because their sadhana is not proper, they actually think, now I can really enjoy the world. When I first came to Krishna consciousness, I was pretty useless. I was frustrated. I really didn't have the capacity to succeed or prosper in society. So I took to this path to give me some alternative, some refuge. But now that I have achieved the refuge of Krishna, and my mind is clear, and I've given up all these bad habits, I've developed skills. And these skills actually are very much needed in society. And I can make lots of money, and I can become very much well known, and I could be happy, and I can now actually, I can enjoy, by Krishna's grace, now I can enjoy like anything and be successful. And then their hope for being happy through material prosperity is awakened in their heart. And then such people, they can't hear the Srimad Bhagavatam anymore. They can listen, but they cannot hear. Even when they're chanting the holy names, they can't even hear the name anymore. Hardly. To the degree we still want to lord it over material nature and enjoy, we cannot hear Krishna's name. We cannot hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. The message can penetrate our heart to the degree we are desperately eager and anxious for that medicine. Rupa Goswami says we must become eager, what he calls greed, lobha. It is not the kind of greed like in the material world. It is a greed where we are feeling so desperate that we have to have it. There's no other alternative. There's nothing else that can possibly benefit my life except hearing the glories of the Lord, serving the devotees of the Lord, and chanting the names of the Lord. Krishna told Maharaj Yudhisthira Maharaj was inquiring from Krishna that we are your devotees. We're always thinking of you. We're your good friends. And you are the husband of the goddess of fortune. Why we had to go through such difficulties? why our mother Kunti, she had to live so many long years with her heart being broken moment after moment by what we were going through. And why we lost our kingdom, we lost our wealth, we lost the dignity of our reputation. We were living like beggars. We're your devotees. Of course, Yudhisthira Maharaj, in his heart of hearts, he knew the nature of Krishna's mercy. But for our benefit, he asked. And Krishna's reply was this: when I want to show my mercy to my devotee, I'll give that devotee whatever he wants. But when I want to show my specialist mercy to the devotee, I take everything away. I take away all of his wealth, all of his distinction, even his own family members turn against him. And then that devotee has nowhere else and no one else to turn to except me. That is special mercy. And he spoke this to Maharaj Yudhisthira. And similarly, Queen Kunti, she prayed in this way. That those who are too much proud due to the possession of good wealth, good education, physical beauty, high parentage, they are unfortunate. They are attached, they are proud, they cannot feelingly call out your name. They cannot feelingly, intensely, with hunger in their hearts, associate with your devotees and hear from them. Therefore, they are in the most lamentable condition of life. Sometimes successful people come before sadhus to show off what they have done, what they have accomplished, what they have achieved in life, to try to impress us. And we look at them, and our heart is just breaking to see what a lamentable and what a unfortunate condition they're in. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyame. What is day for a materialist is night for a devotee. Devotees don't take seriously. They're not impressed by any material achievement. In fact, they are appalled. They feel sorry for those who are materially successful. And they rejoice for those who are frustrated and hungry to hear the truth. This is the society of Vaishnavas. At Navadvip, at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Navadvip was the most flourishing town. It was fabulously wealthy. And it was the highest seat of scholarship in all of India. There was great pundits, deeply learned scholars of the scriptures. There were people who were very, very, very well off, with luxurious clothes and jewelry, educational degrees, beautiful homes, succulent, opulent foods, eating whenever they like. And they were enjoying all sorts of social events. And the Vaishnavas used to come together to cry and weep to see what a lamentable condition they were in. The materialists, they used to think the Vaishnavas were total failures in life. Kolavecha Sridhar, he lived so simple. He had practically nothing, and yet he would never cheat anyone. He had such a simple occupation, With his intelligence, he could have become a very rich man if he so desired. But he just didn't desire it. He was content just selling some banana leaves and making just enough to worship Mother Ganges as the servant of the servant of the Lord and provide not even the basic necessities. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he saw Kolavecha Sridhar, he said, "What is? I know you have a great treasure that you are hiding from everyone. You are just pretending to be in poverty." Sridhar said, "What do I need?" When Sridhar was sometimes accused by people, "You have nothing." He said, "What? Look, I have my cloth. It may have holes in it. It may have, may be sewn in so many different places. But it's covering my body. What's the difference between this and the king's cloth? Serves the function. And as far as food, I may be skinny, but somehow or other I'm surviving. I have no needs, I have no wants. God is providing everything." Because he was always chanting God's name. And the materialistic people, who were very, very well off, very opulent, performing their religious ceremonies for the purpose of material life, they used to just think that this Sridhar is a total failure. He's chanting the names of God all night long. Why? Because he doesn't have enough to eat. He's feeling the pangs of hunger, and he's just screaming out due to his agony of hunger. So they used to actually take vegetables and throw them at his house and tell him to shut up. "Here, take some food, eat it, and shut up, you stupid..." Materially useless people. This is the way they thought of all the Vaishnavas, just useless. But when the Vaishnavas would see them reveling and enjoying all of their social forms of entertainment and all of their wealth and prosperity, the Vaishnavas would simply weep and cry and pray to Krishna to save them. This is the difference between material life and spiritual life. Vishwarup, the elder brother of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, upon seeing the materialistic people so much endeavoring to enjoy material life and enjoying it as well, he was so depressed. He couldn't tolerate to even see their faces. It was just too excruciatingly painful to see the face of spirit souls part of God in the most embarrassing, shameless condition of trying to enjoy material life. And what was worse is they were enjoying it. The most highly respected personality in all of the jungle of Trikuta. But then when the crocodile attacked him and all of his material pursuits were in vain and he was on the verge of death right in front of all of his family, he was totally defeated. That hurts when you're trying to impress your family members and right before their eyes you're totally defeated and helpless. So at that time, he was in a desperate condition, and then the remembrance of his previous life of studying the scriptures and learning prayers came to his heart, and he began to offer those prayers to the Supreme Lord Vishnu with pure unalloyed devotion, and he became perfect. Within minutes, Lord Narayan personally appeared before him. Not only did he save him from the crocodile, but he saved him from the crocodile of birth and death once and for all. The Lord personally put him on a carrier that brought him back to Vaikuntha. in his original spiritual body. So it is true that whatever we are learning, if we are sincerely hearing from proper sources, then that impression will always be there when we need it the most. But at the same time, there is a saying, Srila Prabhupada actually explained, there's three types of people. One, just by hearing, understands and learns the truth of material life. It's not necessary that you have to go through frustration and suffering. It's not necessarily that you have to lose everything and all your family members have to hate you. It may be necessary. Depends on your receptivity. If just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam with a sincere heart, you learn the futility of material life, even when all success is around you, then you can go back to Godhead in that situation. So that is first class intelligence. One who learns by hearing the truth. Second class is one who hears but really doesn't have so much faith or believe it. He may externally believe it, but he still wants to try for himself. And such a person, he knows what the truth is, but he's still too attached to actually follow it. So that person eventually gets kicked, he gets smashed, he suffers, and then he runs to the truth and he says, I surrender, Krishna, I'm yours. That's second class intelligent. First class, no need for change in your life condition. Just by hearing, you accept it and you follow it. Second class, you hear it, sounds right, but you still go on with your materialistic ways until you're smashed, and then you say, yes, this is right. I will follow. That is called second class intelligence. Experience is the best teacher, and a fool learns by no other way. That is the actual entirety of that saying. Most people like to leave out the second part. Experience is the best teacher. I've heard it, but I must experience it myself. How many devotees we? I've heard this, yes, but I have to go out and experience it. So many of our young children that are born in Krishna consciousness, they hear the truth, but they feel, I have to go out and experience it, otherwise I'll never understand it. What is material life? I've heard that drugs are bad. Theoretic, it's too theoretical. I need realization. So I must experience what is drugs. I hear illicit sex is miserable, but I don't have any realization of it because it looks very nice. So I believe it, but I have to experience what is illicit sex. And gambling and meat eating and all sorts of other activities. And they say experience is the best teacher. And a fool learns by no other way. So that is called second class intelligence. And third class intelligence is we hear, we know it's true, but we don't have the determination. We still think, let me try. Let me see. Maybe I can do it. Maybe I will be the one exception in the history of the whole creation who can actually enjoy material life. And then we get kicked, we get smashed, we get frustrated, but still, try again. If the reason why I'm smashed and kicked and pulverized and miserable is because I just didn't do it right. So let me try it again and do it right. And then every time we get smashed, we think, oh, now I'm getting fine-tuned. Next time I'll do better. This way. We hear, we get kicked, and we never learn our lesson. Because basically we are simply insincere. So the best thing is just to have faith. Krishna and the great acharyas, they know what is this material world. They're explaining, dukalayam ashashvatam. Believe it. Don't put any more hopes here. Padam padam yadvi padam natesha. Yes?
When the Gajendra prayed for the Lord, Maharaj, when Gajendra prayed for the Lord, that is motivated by his material distress, and still it considered to be the unalloyed devotional service, how is it?
The reawakening of his consciousness came about through material distress. But if you read his prayers were not at all praying for material relief. His material distress simply taught him a good lesson. But if you study his prayers, you'll be very enlightened. Because he's saying in those prayers,